This is RSVNB Update, episode 523, recorded June 27, 2015. The game was rigged from the start. Hi, everyone, and thank you for joining us for RSVNB Update.
Hello.
That is Earth. Joining Earth and myself this week is Sirion, leader of Clan Quest, my clan.
Hi there.
Earth's clan. Welcome. Nice to have you on board.
And your clan.
I did say that. I said my clan and your clan.
Oh, you did? Didn't sound like you did.
Anyways, hello to both of you.
Hello.
Good evening.
So, Sirion, give the listeners a brief 45-second introduction about who you are.
I'm a RS player. I have been playing for 12 years or so, with a bit of a gap in between. And in real life, I'm also a game developer. I released my first commercial game on Steam last January, and... Well, right now I'm just sitting back, finishing my thesis, and playing more RuneScape, actually.
All right, and we have actually heard about that game before, as Earth here did use it.
Pick of the week.
You did use it as a pick of the week, Roche Fusion.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting game. All right, so this week we have the Artisan's Workshop update. Artisan's Workshop, I didn't... really put much into this piece of content when it first came out, mainly because it seemed more expensive than traditional smithing.
Yeah, but you don't have to do anything.
Explain.
Like, you just go to the burial armor, and then for 5 minutes, you can just go do something else.
Yeah, and that's actually one of the areas that they improved, but we'll get there in just a moment. Because the whole point of this update was actually just to increase the usability of it, and I want to say smooth out some of the rough edges. Would you guys, on a whole, say that this accomplished what it was aiming to do?
Well, why don't you tell us what the changes were first, and then we can explain like what each of them did and how it helped,
right? So first up, burial armor is a new interface. So by default, the first ingot in your inventory will now be selected when smithing burial armor. Also, the interface will respond as you swap ingots in and out of your interface. And selecting new pieces of armor can be done while smithing and will be applied on the next loop. Selecting new ore will immediately stop and restart the smithing process with the new ore. And I don't know if you could do this before, but you can press the buttons on your keyboard to select as well. So you don't even need to use your mouse.
That's nice.
All right, I will start with a confession. I have never done burial armor before.
All right. Yeah, the XP did seem kind of slow compared to, you know, the ceremonial swords and whatnot.
Yeah, but the advantage is, like I said, you don't have to do anything. So for the ceremonial swords, you actually have to do stuff, right?
Yeah, and I mean, there's
you have to pay quite a bit of attention.
Mm-hmm.
With the
ceremonial swords,
with the burial armor, it's a bit more expensive. Not that much, really. But you don't have to pay attention. But the ceremonial sword, you have to pay a lot of attention, and the XP isn't always going to be the same, right?
Yeah.
Because depending on how well you do, yeah.
All right. Well, it seems you're a fan of burial armor then, and I guess Sirion, like the swords better.
Like is a big word.
It's only 4 letters long.
Joke from Shane. Oh god.
I I always thought burial armor was more aimed toward mid-level smithing. I mean, it probably scales with the bars, but I never really looked into it.
It does. It does.
Okay.
Anvils in the burial armor area now have a quick start option as the default left-click operation. I don't know what it would have been before, because, I mean, you just have to click it and you go, which I guess is what they wanted to accomplish here. Maybe you needed to select something in a previous setup interface. Also, the quick smithing effects of the Varrock armor now apply to track making and burial armor. So,
oh, that's good.
Potentially able to do burial armor a bit faster with this, which is good, because we know how many people have Varrock 3 and Varrock 4 armor by this stage. So that's something you can do, even though this is in Falador, which is kind of odd, wouldn't you say?
Why?
The quick smithing effects are global, so...
Oh, okay. I thought they were only at the anvil in Varrock and the furnace in Edgeville, no?
No.
Oh, well, you learn something new every day. All right.
Indeed.
When creating a sword, you can now request an offhand variant. So if you get a perfect sword and you want it for your offhand, that's doable.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, because, I mean, people obviously want these as cosmetic items for their left hand rather than their right hand, so might as well. The amount required for the Mithril Sword's daily challenge has been reduced. Now, is this the one that you did, Sirion?
Thank God. Those challenges took forever. Yeah.
Wasn't it like 120 of them?
They were reduced from 16 to 12.
Oh.
So, yeah, that cuts the time to do them a bit. And they also added challenges for Adamant and Rune Swords, which is the next improvement.
That's good.
Which are even less. I think they're 9 and 6 respectively, so that makes it even a bit more quicker to do them.
Now,
and that's great, because it took like an hour to do that daily.
Now, a question I have for you on this one. You obviously need to dump a lot of Mithril ore into this one. Do you get back out from the challenge person a reasonable reward for doing this challenge?
I think it's very similar to construction. Like, it almost puts you back to zero loss, so it's almost 3 XP. I never really pay attention to how much I lose, but it's definitely not a lot.
Okay.
Like, the rewards are at least 1 mil of GP back.
Oh,
so.
Wow. Okay, so...
Or that's, I think, something about...
I'm not sure on the numbers required to create an ingot, but we can...
It's a lot. It's like 30 mithril ore and, I think, 40? Or even more. For 12 ceremonial swords, I needed 1440 mithril ore, so do the math.
1440, 256. Yeah, it's about 370,000 GP worth of mithril ore. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, you probably save then. So, that's good.
Yeah.
When using a heated ingot on the water pool, you'll be given the opportunity to change your entire inventory at once rather than one item. Now, we're going to also group this with the next batch of fixes because ceremonial sword fixing has been made smoother. Tongs can be stored on the tool belt. Ingots can be used directly without heating them first. So,
oh, that's good.
Yeah, so that's
annoying if you needed to put them back. You know,
yeah,
to pull them one by one.
But that's really interesting because they got rid of. Well, they made it easier to like cool heated ingots again, and tongs can now be stored on the tool belt. But neither are necessary anymore,
yeah,
since you can now just use
exactly
normal ingots. So it's a bit.
And what's the point of the water pool now, either? Right. So.
Maybe when nobody's around, the dwarves have a little fun there.
Say what?
Just speculating.
Maybe when the dwarves are around, or when no one's around, the dwarves have some fun in the water pool, he said. Oh, that's great.
All right.
Also, single left click on the anvil now places the ingot and the plans and opens the interface.
Yeah, that used to be an unnecessary extra action, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I remember when I, or maybe I checked this update out. I can't remember who was doing the show and what was going on back then, but I remember this being a very hard thing to get into. So barrier to entry has been decreased quite a bit. So that's nice. Now, do you guys think that ceremonial sword making is a good way of smithing training?
If you're willing to pay attention, sure.
It works for dailies. It's like, it's really good XP. I think you get better XP for your ores than just smithing or even smelting. But it you have to pay constant attention. It's like a mini game. So yeah. I wouldn't do it as mainstream smithing training.
No, that's the thought I was having too. And I mean, unless you were coming off of getting like 120 agility and you think that anything in game is, you know, not nearly as monotonous as agility, then maybe this is for you. But anyways, the Artisan Burial overlay has been relocated to the top left of the screen, remains open everywhere in the workshop, and displays your current respect. Where was it before, if I might ask?
I don't recall.
I think the current respect was something they once added as a ninja fix, so I guess these two were separately on the screen, and now they sort of grouped them, but...
Oh, okay. Yeah. Hmm. Attack rate of ceremonial swords has been rebalanced. Okay, I don't know anyone who's going to use a ceremonial sword as a weapon, but you have that.
If they nerf Darklight even further, who knows?
When withdrawing or depositing ingots, only metals currently held will be offered. Note that this doesn't filter by ingot type. Any thoughts on that?
Not really.
All right. Sirion?
It's just a good update.
Sounds good.
Dent chances have been tweaked to be fairer in terms of leading to perfect successes.
Yeah, that's actually interesting. When I did my daily earlier, I actually got like more than half of them perfect, which is not something that happened to me before. So I guess that they have been making changes to that. Maybe they made it easier. On the other hand, the medium hits, for example, seem a lot less forgiving. So I guess if they really did it and my perfect swords were not like statistical noise or whatever, I guess they did a pretty good job in changing these probabilities to make it fairer without really making any noticeable change. But I guess we'll have to wait until some crazy people do some analysis on the probabilities.
That is not I. But yeah, I agree with you in terms of the medium hits. Those ones did seem a little bit odd.
Yeah, I do remember it being not impossible to get perfect ones, but it was uncommon.
Yeah.
I found. I usually got about 90%, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, usually if you do it right, you can always get 95% plus. Unless you are really unlucky. But now it's pretty much possible to get at least half of them perfect, which is cool because that gives a 20% experience bonus if your sword is perfect.
Do you have any general tips for anyone out there wanting to get perfect swords?
Yeah,
follow the design.
It really comes... you can use like a certain strategy, like if you have... five left, you should do this and this, and I can explain it all here, but I pretty much learned mine from the RuneScape Wikia. They have like a little guide on there that basically gives you like a good strategy, so go there and just use it's a bit of an algorithm, and only the last few hits it comes down to taking chances and such, so take a look there.
All right, We will have a link for that in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com. Dent messaging is now filtered. Yay. We don't need...
I remember that being obnoxious.
That was, yeah. Now I can actually, like, follow the chat while doing my dailies.
Yeah.
That's good. Now, a warning message displays when handing in ceremonial swords that would award 0 XP. Who would do such a thing?
Someone who's not paying attention.
You wouldn't, or you were really unlucky in case you're not able to do anything about it anyway, so... Meh.
Okay. And finally, audio has been reworked. Honestly, for me, from the audio side, didn't sound like anything too special going on.
I'll take their word for it.
Yeah. All right. Any other little hidden things in terms of mechanics that you guys want to highlight on before we talk about rewards?
Not really.
Not really, no.
All right. So you can get a restocking cannon for 100 respect, which of course requires you previously have the royal cannon unlocked. It grants the cannon the ability to reload automatically, but you must have cannonballs in your inventory and be within 15 squares for it to work.
If I think it's really cool if you are one of those people that still uses a cannon.
Yeah, the usefulness of the cannon kind of went out of the window with EOC.
EOC, yeah.
It still has its uses. It's also really expensive to use, so I think a lot of people just stopped using it.
Yep. I mean, there's no reason to use the cannon. You can range things in an area of effect manner more effective than you can with the cannon and kill things faster. So that's the
problem. Yeah, I mean, if you're using it to... You can still use it, like, as a supplement, I guess you could say.
Well, I used it once to do, like, a Dagonoth Slayer task. And it actually works quite well, except for all of them start attacking you, and I died twice.
Yeah.
But, I mean, for that, for like the mid-level Slayer tasks, they can really speed up your task, but at a price that probably only rich people can even pay. So, I mean, you used to have problems finding an empty spot without a cannon there, that's not an issue anymore since EOC.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right.
Didn't they nerf the max hit really hard, too?
I think so. I used to remember it being... I'm not sure what it was, but it went down to something only like 300. If I recall.
300?
Yeah, because, you know, 300 is low in terms of EOC.
Wow, that is pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look that up.
Sounds unlikely.
You know who we could ask about this? We could ask Alex. He'd know. He uses that thing quite often. But anyways, don't take my numbers for that, seeing as I haven't used a cannon in years.
It appears to have a maximum hit of around 700.
Oh, okay. Well, I got half of it. Next up, ceremonial sword order increase for 50% respect. Increases the orders received by the workshop, occasionally allowing you to choose which ceremonial sword you want to make.
That's actually pretty cool, because some of the designs are really annoying to make. Like, most of them are pretty easy to get perfect now, but some of them are just really annoying. Like, hitting two is one of the hardest things, probably the hardest, or it takes the most hits on average. And if you have, like, a sword that needs a lot of those, then that's harder to get right than something that needs a lot of ones, for example.
Yeah, because medium hit will do between 0 and 3. Small hit will be 1, I think.
Zero, one, or two?
The precise one? Which one is that?
The precise one always gives one, but costs double temperature.
Yeah. Oh, so does it always give one now? There's no...
The careful always already gave exactly one.
Well, it could also give zero, too.
Maybe?
Yes.
All right. With a really low probability, then.
Sword polishing kit, 10% respect, gives 10 sword polishing kits, which, when held in your inventory, can prevent a ceremonial sword from breaking.
If you break a sword, you're stupid.
Yeah, and...
No, seriously, I mean, you can prevent it in most cases, and if you want to take the risk, which you never shoot, then that's your own fault. I think the 10% respect is better spent elsewhere.
I agree. And a bonus package for 100% respect gives 8 mithril ingot 4, 4 adamant ingot 4, 2 rune ingot 4, 50,000 bonus smithing XP, and 10 sword polishing kits. Note that the ingots in this bundle cannot be exchanged for ore and do not count towards daily challenges.
So this sounds like somebody useful to somebody who actually is planning on using Artisan's Workshop as proper means to level.
Yes.
Which I don't think a lot of people do, by the lack of people actually there. Game.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe that's why this is here, because if we can encourage people to go there and, you know, train smithing with this little reward, maybe this won't be such abandoned content.
True, but if you look, like, you get 14 ingots across different metals, that gives you 14 ceremonial swords. That's not going to even give you 10% respect back. So this is really a small bonus on top of the actual trading method. So I doubt this will be enough to actually get people away from their portable forges.
I agree. All right. Well, there's the Artisan's Workshop Ninja update. Anything else before we move on to the patch notes for the week?
Not really.
I'll save my points for the spotlights we will discuss later.
All right, sounds good then. So, tweaks and fixes. Changes from the combat beta have been moved into the live game, and these are the ones pertaining to stuns and also the asphyxiate and destroy ability. It's also worth noting that this was the legacy soul split healing cap, so if you use legacy, soul split will be more useful to you. Not too much to say on these. Been in beta for quite some time, and they seem like decent fixes. Also, the early bird bonus for Adamant and Rune Dragons has been extended until July 6th. So, you can keep doing that over there. Also, moving in through the patch notes, I just closed my notes, but that's no problem.
Why you do this?
I don't know. The Adventurer's Log.
So,
yeah?
Oh, I was just going to read one of them.
Oh, okay.
That I liked.
Well, we'll...
But go ahead.
I want to talk about this Adventurer's Log one.
All right.
So if you...
You go right ahead.
If you go to a character's Adventurer Log, you can see them in-game with what their model looks like as to what you last took in the photo booth.
Ooh.
So if you click that link in the notes, you can see what I look like.
Let's all look
Like you? Real you?
Yeah.
Real you.
Yeah, click it.
Wants to permanently store large data on your computer. Uh-oh.
Yeah, it's HTML5 based. So, you go right ahead.
So we get to admire your farming cape?
Yes.
God, what's wrong with your face?
I don't know.
Like,
what do you mean?
Hold on.
And if we change the URL to,
like that, what? Even?
If we change the URL to say Lord Earth, oh, it's a private profile. Need to log in. But you can see,
oh, it is.
Yeah, you can see yours with the double eye patches,
which are the best. And I wish I could wear with my awesome hat, but I can't. Thanks, Jagex.
Yeah, that's some pretty weird shadowing, but yeah, definitely check this
pretty
out.
Pretty weird. That's disgusting.
Yeah. Well, check this out. I found it amusing to play with this and look and see what can be found. It's also worth noting that on this, if you are using the old cape models, for example, those are not reflected on this. So if you're...
Oh, I don't like that. Jagex.
And we see Sirion's picture of his 99 runecrafting cape and Elven crystal bow. So
that image is old.
Yeah, see, it goes to based with what you did in the photo booth, so you should definitely update it then.
Yeah, that's years ago for me.
I had to update mine because I wanted to see what my current model looked like, so I got rid of the one with my pith helmet, unfortunately. But anyways.
Your pith helmet?
Yeah, it's...
I look a bit...
Pith helmet is the Indiana Jones hat.
Oh. Oh, that.
Yes.
So particle effects also don't appear to work, really?
No.
The shadows look very strange.
I guess that's why my face looks so derpy.
Everyone's face does. All right. Read your...
That's not what you look like.
...thing in the patch notes that you wanted to mention.
The Bone Crusher now has a settings menu, allowing players to select which types of bones are destroyed for XP when dropped by NPCs. All options are switched off by default. I like this because... I'm lazy and use the presets now, so when I go on a dragon's task, I don't want the dragon bones to be destroyed, but I don't want to have to take the time to remove the bone crusher from my inventory. Put it in the bank.
Ah, that's huge.
So now I don't have to worry about that.
Because when I looked at this update, I'm like, why don't you just leave the bone crusher in your bank?
Tool belt.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can use it with the Slayer belt now, right?
Exactly.
So this toggle didn't work for the tool belt when they introduced it last week?
Nope.
That seems like a huge oversight.
Can you honestly say you're surprised about that?
No.
There we go.
No.
There we go. More rune dragons have been added to Mount Firewake. I did not know that's what we were calling that. So that's good.
Mount Firewake?
Yeah, and Kethsi.
What is that? Oh.
Also, rune dragons are no longer aggressive, so it means you can't run through and aggro everything, so that's good.
Hooray!
Because it was very tedious fighting them when, you know, they would just decide it's time to attack you, and it would not end well if you...
would just decide.
Yeah, because, I mean...
It's your time. It's your time to go.
Yeah.
I mean, I get why they're no longer aggressive. I'm just not sure why they added more, because, I mean, I guess it's just a response to all the whining of the people there are not enough spawns, but rune dragons are good money-making, so shouldn't there be a bit of competition over the spawns?
Exactly, my thoughts.
I mean, the crowdedness is going to wear off over the next couple of weeks, so...
But Jagex and the economy...
Well, I mean, I'm sure they took some balancing considerations into this, right?
Yeah. Should we balance this? Eh, it'll be fine. I think that was what they might have done.
Maybe. Slayer and combat XP from Rune Dragons has been increased using Glacers as a baseline. Slayer and combat XP from Rune Dragons was really, really low.
Oh, hey, that was a post on Reddit.
Oh, God.
It was.
Okay. Gravestones.
When someone compared the XP you get in the life points for those two. and it didn't compare as it should have.
Okay. Gravestones on Mount Firewake are now relocated to near the World Gate, similar to deaths on Frenisque.
Hooray!
No, that's good. I mean, this was really a problem with the aggressive rune dragons, but with them not being aggressive now, I'm not sure this is much of an issue. But it adds consistency.
This seems to be one of those things we had with Artisan's Workshop, where they solved the same issue in two different ways, so...
Yeah.
Very efficient. But at least you make sure that it's done right.
Oh, yeah.
Or something.
Also, a question I was going to ask you guys after contemplating the dragon update. Does it make sense that lodestones work outside of, you know, Gielinor? As in on Kethsi?
Well, they work for going to Tuska. And Tuska, strictly speaking, is also not on the world.
True.
So then it's just a question, how big is the range of lodestone magic, if there is such a thing?
Yeah, and I
too much.
I don't think that's something we want to.
Too much power.
I don't think that's something we want to go into because of this guy here. And I just pointed over to my left, assuming you were sitting to my left, but evidently you're not.
Well, I mean, I am to your left.
All right. The number of adamant dragons assigned by a Slayer Master has been increased. It's now 40 to 50 for Curadel and 40 to 60 for Morvryn.
As compared to...
I don't know. I did not get a Slayer task, and they did not provide those.
It was really low. It was like...
5?
20 or so? 10, 20? Something like that. Basically... Okay. At that point where you finally get into your Slayer task, it will be over.
Okay. Sounds good to me. Anything else from the patch notes that I may have missed?
Well, what I find interesting is they fixed like the green triangles in the particle effect on Tuska. And they were really bothering me. They have been there for 2 weeks. And I was like, I know how to fix this.
Which green triangles are these?
So there was the particle effect next to Wizard Chambers on Tuska.
Okay.
They added that 2 weeks ago to make it more clear where you could jump to the island.
Oh, okay.
It's like the sparkly effect. And they added the same effect on like the teeth of Tuska to make it more clear where you can climb up. Except for the green triangles are still there. So they have two identical particle effects. They fixed one of them and not the other. So that's... That's QA, because I guess the QA people were too lazy to actually go to Tuska 20 minutes, you know. So that's still there.
Yeah. All right. Well, if there's nothing else in the patch notes, going once, twice.
I got nothing.
All right. Well, it's time for a Tuska battle update then, and something great and momentous has happened.
Gielinor saved. We win.
And let's just
what?
Let's just a little bit of victory music to set the mood.
Is that the Red Army Choir?
Might be.
Is that the Red Army Choir?
Yeah, I think it is.
Oh my god.
But for the last week and a bit, we have been on a complete winning streak against Tuska, and we have now won a majority of the days, and I guess...
Oh my god, stop!
I guess we're saved.
You commies. Who is playing that?
Who do you think?
I don't know, you're both commies!
It's me!
All right.
But we win.
Hooray.
Yeah.
So, am I the only one that thought this was going to happen regardless?
No.
Yeah. I mean...
The game was rigged from the start. Come on.
I mean, the start was actually... interesting in some way. Like, maybe the balance would be a bit towards Tuska, but it actually made it interesting. Because I thought, okay, maybe we can actually see some big destruction, because that's yeah. what... No, but that's what world events are supposed exactly. to be about. Like, I think Jagex needs to show some balls here and basically be like, okay, you lost. Say goodbye to your Felidar graphical rework. We're going to wipe it from the map. Yeah, I mean... I mean, this might not be exactly how we should do it, but I think with that respect, the first world event was the best in that it actually left a big scar on the world.
Yes.
And I think that's what world events should be about. And what's going to happen now is that the Godless are going to do something to Tuska. Tuska is going to die and nothing is going to happen really, and everybody's going to forget about this. And I think that's...
There's
going
to be a massive extinction event.
I mean, I think that's sad. I would have loved to
see... Yeah, it is sad.
I agree.
A lot of things are going to die.
It would have been very interesting to see a mass extinction event and see certain
yeah.
elements of society disappear.
I think uh-huh. there could have been improvements to how this worked. Like, when you see Godless at some point steamrolling the victories in, I think it is very easy to, like, tweak things a bit to make it more even. Like, I heard somebody say that what was supposedly the case is that if the Godless win, Tuska becomes a bit stronger the next day, and if Tuska wins, Tuska becomes a bit weaker next day. Now, I'm not sure if that's the case, but if you do that right, you can make this really interesting because you get a very even match.
Exactly. And at the beginning, it seemed like that's what they were doing.
Yeah.
But then it just stopped halfway through the month.
I mean, it might be with the meteors coming along. Like, I'm not sure if they are probably damaging as well. But if every meteor counts for a stab, I know that I get several a day. So that would make a huge difference.
Yeah. And
so I guess that caused the turning point.
And that is really when it turned, when all those meteors started appearing. And... You know, I was thinking about this. This isn't something that they weave in at a moment's notice because you have to design the whole meteor mechanic and whatnot. So that was obviously planned out, you know, before the event began.
Mm-hmm.
So, conspiracy. I mean, maybe they were hoping that we would be more forceful and cause Tuska to, you know, be more forceful as well by what you were saying, play off each other's strengths, but... I don't know. I don't think it worked out too very well. But, I mean, it just feels like it's going to be a fizzle and a pop rather than a big bang, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
we
haven't reached the end yet, so we don't know what's going to happen when the thing actually lands and crashes. But based on our win rate, it doesn't seem like too much damage is going to be done.
All right, someone explain to me, like, what the point of going on to Tuska and stabbing it is?
We can...
Like, how is that
we can
gonna hurt. Help? It's still a giant thing hurtling towards the planet? Like, if nothing else, the pure kinetic energy is going to cause a lot of damage,
uh-huh,
right?
Uh-huh, and...
So, like, what's the point?
Says the person who... didn't like it. The first thing I went into with this update when it came out was the law of gravity. Now we're talking kinetic energy.
You're being annoying that day.
My guess is that when we put enough anima mundi in that mouth of the beast, it's gonna splat apart in tiny pieces. There you go. Problem solved.
So we Janeway it.
There you go, yeah. Deus Ex.
Deus Ex Machina. Hooray!
And you know, I had that thought as well. We're all on the same wavelength here regarding that. Oh, it's going to be just resolved like that. But anyways, I don't know. If you want to hear an alternate point of view, something that, you know, doesn't revolve in apocalyptic conspiracies about Jagex, you know, having their fingers in all
Illuminati.
The pies. Yeah.
Illuminati.
Yeah, if you want to hear a more down-to-earth approach and something that, you know,
like down to Gilinor, sure. Right?
Gives, you know, maybe a more grounded view, let's say. You can head over to the Informer at informer.rsbnb.com and read Lord Rickle's latest article called The Tusken Cosmic Apocalyptic Conspiracies.
Nice plug.
Yeah, that's what I do.
I know.
So, I don't know. Basically, well, I'm not going to spoil what Lord Rickle says. I'll let you read that on your own. But basically, it's the alternate viewpoint towards ours.
I wonder what it's going to say.
Yeah, well, I mean, he can have his own theory.
Looks like y'all will have to go read it to find out.
Exactly. But he does say that Jagex could sell Tuska-proof fallout shelters in Solomon's General Store for $19.99.
Or vaults.
There you go.
Right?
Sure.
Right?
I guess. I don't
know. You don't get the reference. Oh, and neither does Sirion, because he didn't.
Don't you worry.
Someone, the listeners will hopefully get
Are you
that.
Making a Fallout reference?
Yes.
Okay. I got the reference as well. I'm not that old.
You're not, you don't have your head as far in the ground as Shane does?
Apparently not. I know what a vault is.
I know what a vault is as well. But anyways. So, let's move on. The combat beta can now be used to replay the My Rec quest series.
Oh man, I should do that.
We all should do that. Because remember,
yep.
The next part of the My Rec quest series is coming out later this year. So now is a perfect time to go replay the entire thing.
Yeah,
is
it's going to
be the final one?
I think it is, but I would have to look back at my notes for that.
I think this is the second last one.
We are going to meet Lord Dragondale this time.
That's, oh, well, that's good at least, I guess.
So yeah, this is a temporary thing on the beta server. I think they said it is temporary. Basically, they did a hard reset on a lot of Mauritania stuff. So all stuff like temple tracking is also reset. So this is not something they can just implement on the main server as well. Because that would take like a lot more time to make sure that other things stay in place.
Yeah, I mean, when you're messing around with that kind of stuff, you don't exactly want to be resetting things willy-nilly.
Yeah, but I think...
Yeah, you might delete a skill or something accidentally, right, Shane?
I don't know what you're talking about. I haven't the slightest idea. But are you guys both going to go replay
Shane
these quests?
Shane accidentally deleted summoning. Eventually, yeah.
I'll try to put some time aside for it, yeah. I think using the combat beta for this is actually a really good idea and a good compromise for the reset. So I can't say anything but kudos to Jagex.
I've not actually logged in to the beta servers in a long time, but like I can take my player that's in the live game and just copy it over, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
You have to play the beta through the browser, though, so it won't work in GNOME because GNOME stopped with Java support.
You can actually modify the client.
There is a workaround for the client, but you need to dive into some files for that.
I can do that.
Yeah, and when this... Actually, we'll make a video on that. That's a good idea.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah.
With the good ideas. Yeah.
Actually, Sirion, if you want to do it, you just edit the runescape.app bundle on OS X.
I know.
Yeah. Oh, right. Of course you know. Sorry about that.
I have a legacy client. No, old school client.
Even though it has a native one?
Hmm?
It has a native one now.
Oh, it didn't have it back when I edited the files then.
Oh, okay.
All right.
But yeah, being there.
I just want to say I wish we could have done this for the Elf series.
Yeah.
I mean, just to think of what it would be like to start from the very beginning and play through that entire quest line in one day all the way to Plague's End. That would have been really nice.
Yeah, I got to do some of that with Andrew, though, my roommate, so that was fun.
Yeah, if only we could be so fortunate.
Poor Shane.
Anyways, we also have this week two Ninja Spotlights featuring the Myrec series and Fista Guthix. Which one would you like to start with, Sirion?
Let's start with the Myrec series because my week, I don't know.
All right.
Those guys that hunt vampires.
Yeah. Basically the anti-Twilight people of RuneScape.
Mm-hmm.
So, what do we got? What are we looking at, and what are they thinking of doing for this quest series?
So, yeah, Spotlights is something ninjas want to do more. Basically, to take a piece of content like they did with the Artisan's Workshop, and they just do, like, small little fixes, like quality of life fixes. So nothing big, but just like revisit a lot of old areas, especially with all these Iron Men coming into like the game that go back to low level, mid level content. It's just obvious that so much content, it just sucks in comparison to what we have now.
Yep.
So yeah, for the My Week series, they want to like only do a few small things. Like, they only just started this, so what they do is they go on the forums and gather IDs. Right now they wanna do some really small things, like buff Fire Lords and Ladies, for example. Change some drop tables. And they wanna use some of the assets they use for Branches of Darkmire, for example, into the old quests.
Oh, that's good.
The kind of stuff they're looking at. Like, basically just putting things on a more similar level. And they say basically they want to do something similar as what they did with the Elf quests when Plague's End came out. They also had like all these updates. I think they did actually a pretty big update on that.
Yeah, they redid like, the entire underground pass.
Yeah. So I think this will not be as big because they don't have much graphic resources for this update, but you can look at similar updates otherwise.
Yeah, and I mean, when something is that old, you definitely have to look at it. And
yeah,
if I recall, some of these actually did come out before the high-quality client. So, I mean, increasing model polygons is probably a good thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So basically, now is the time if you have something in the whole vampire area or relating to this quest itself. You can head on over to the forums and post and, you know, provide feedback on this. Which is a very good thing to do.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I heard you were continuing. Shall we move on to Fist of Guthix?
Fist of Guthix.
Yeah, I feel kind of the same way with that. I mean,
It feels very similar to, like, Artisan's Workshop. Like, in a way, it's really cool they are revisiting these old things, but is it really going to change the fact that nobody is ever going there?
It's not, because Fist of Guthix was designed as low-level PvP content for peers, which that segment of the players don't exist anymore. So, I mean, I don't think...
Yeah, the people that do exist in that area are Iron Man, who are probably not interested in Fist of Guthix at all.
Exactly. So...
So...
I mean...
I doubt this will make a big difference.
What really needs to happen here is this needs to be rolled into a larger PvP spotlight. Or something to that effect. Because I did Fist of Guthix when it first came out, and it was good, but the problem there was that, I mean, even then, I was only around combat, I want to say, 100 or 110 or so way back when. And it was a slaughter fest for me. Basically, anyone who came in, it was just easy to kill them in one go. Before EOC.
Yeah, I remember. I remember doing that as well.
So,
I mean, they appear to want to make some changes that, like, better bring that mechanic forward of hunting and hunted. Like, I mean, when I played Fist of Gothix, it was basically go to the center, hide among all the others.
Yep, because it was really, really crowded and almost impossible to find your target. Yeah.
So that's what they're going to fix now. And, well, with the amount of people there, it's not really a problem anymore anyway. And they're also thinking about adding more rewards, like more high-level rewards. And that can save such an activity. I mean, Stealing Creation is still being played for the... what are they? Seats?
Bonus XP.
Oh, it's bonus XP now, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I'm not sure if that's then... I guess it's still being played?
Oh yeah, Stealing Creation is very popular. Yeah.
So
especially the non-combat variant.
Rewards can save it, especially if it becomes part of the minigame spotlight. But I am very skeptical about this. And I think that spotlights in general are a good idea. But maybe they should be focused on pieces of content that are not already hopefully lost.
I mean, let's just have a look at some of the rewards they're wanting to add. Swordfish and shark gloves to be stored inside a tackle box. Higher level runecrafting gloves up to nature, death, and blood.
What do the gloves do?
Basically, runecrafting gloves, when you take them, I think, if I recall, they provide a quicker teleport to the runecrafting altar. Yes? No? Maybe so?
I think it has years. To do... I think it's... bonus XP.
Oh, okay. Doubles the amount of XP. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's useless. Who runecrafts for XP anymore?
Yeah, that's true.
Well, for the fishing ones might be interesting, but then again, people don't fish swordfish and shark and rocktail and cavefish, presumably, for XP.
And... let's also remember you can buy the swordfish and shark gloves for Thalers now from the minigame system.
True.
And now here's the stupidest one of them all. Add herb gloves up to Torstal and fishing gloves up to Rocktail. Okay, you know what herb gloves do? They basically say you're going to get that kind of herb from something you're fighting. Do we really want to collapse another economy?
Well, I mean... it's already in the gutter already, right?
No, I can make a good living off of fishing gloves in terms of farming.
You mean off of herb gloves?
No, off of standard farming. And if more of these herbs come into the game...
You said fishing.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, herbs. And if more of these come into the game, my profits will go down.
Oh, no.
I mean, just look at what happened to Torstal after that silly road trip thing where you could go harvest however many Torstals per day.
Poor Shane.
Yeah, really. I mean, they 60 days ago they were almost 6k a piece. Now they're down to 4,500. Do we really want that happening with all the other herbs?
To Betsy.
I know.
It made my herbler training a lot cheaper.
That's why I was trying to get you in on a deal, Sirion. I said, I'll farm for you, and it was meant to be a little Ponzi scheme that would benefit me more than you, but you didn't take it, unfortunately.
See, that's the thing. Never take anything from him. Because he will find some way for you where you will have to pay him back.
No.
Right, Shane?
No. There was going to be no debt associated with this. But anyways,
right.
As promised, extra suggestions they plan on making to the Fist of Gothix. Waiting room currently relies on 8 people. They want to bring it down to possibly 4. Currently, magic users can't use magic while being hunted. Well, that's interesting.
Wait, what?
You can't use magic if you're being hunted.
Why not?
I don't know. Something they never
allowed. What about range?
Yeah, that's allowed.
What?
Melee is also allowed. So it's either going to be changed to no combat or all combat.
That's...
yeah, it's really stupid.
Strange.
Yeah. They're also going to ban healing other than bandages. So regenerate, butterflies, etc. Allow players to enter the houses with familiars. Auto give the stone on hunted start. Look into adding a ban timer for instant dropouts. Something similar to
the Great Orb Project.
Okay, the Great Orb Project, thank you. And of course, interfaces are out of date. I mean, these...
wait, what is... houses?
Yeah, remember there's houses on the battlefield?
No.
Well, this update came out before summoning, so you can't take familiars in there.
I see.
Yeah. Like, this sounds all good in theory, but it's low-level content. People aren't going to go there. The rewards are going to be picked up and then forgotten about, and we're going to be back in the same boat.
The MUA spotlight is definitely more worth it than this. I mean, I think that stands beyond doubt.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that. But, I mean, we might have an inherent bias being questers and all, but, I mean, I don't know anyone who was a fan of Fist of Guthix.
I mean, I played it.
Yeah, I did too.
Does that count?
No, I mean, a fan means you have to be going there regularly today.
But there's no one there.
Oh, okay then.
I mean, even if you look at, like, what our clan organizers, for example, it's not Fist of Guthix fan. It's more like Trouble Brewing.
Yeah.
Like, Trouble Brewing is actually a fun game.
Yeah, it's
I think
great.
That's way more popular than Fist of Guthix. If they did a Trouble Brewing spotlight, people would play that, I think.
I agree.
Because it's the best minigame ever.
Yeah. So, why Fist of Guthix of all things? That's the thing that surprises me. And not even what they're going to change, but just why Fist of Guthix?
Well, you just answered your own question there. It's deader than dead.
I think it would be more beneficial to just sweep the content out of the game. And
well, yeah, no one would miss it, that's for sure.
I think this is just kicking a dead horse.
I mean, Romeo and Juliet was removed.
Hey.
That was sad.
That was actually sad.
I agree with you guys on that. But anyways.
That wasn't okay.
Yeah.
It's not okay to make jokes about that, Shane.
Well, I mean, Romeo and Juliet, that's something I think most people do in high school, yeah?
Gonna need you to clarify.
Like, read it, watch it, study it, analyze it.
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah.
Ugh.
I mean,
even
we watched. We had to watch the creepy version of it.
Is that the Leo version?
The Leo version?
Leonardo DiCaprio?
No, I don't think so.
Oh. Okay.
Unless he looked like Zac Efron in that, and there was nudity.
I don't know who...
do not know why that version was chosen.
I do not know who that is, but okay.
Because it was not acceptable.
All right. Well, I mean, high school students will find that appealing, that's for sure.
I was in eighth grade.
Well, I'm sure there will still be people that will find it appealing.
Nah. The guy looks like Zac Efron, and the girl
who is that?
Who is Zac Efron?
Yeah.
Really?
Really? Sirion, do you know who this guy is?
Zac Efron? I know who Zac Efron is.
Oh,
yeah, and he's foreign.
All right.
I have little sisters.
Yeah.
That's the whole problem. That's why I know Zac Efron.
Okay, well.
All right.
Oh,
Moving on.
Disney Channel. Okay. So, yes, we should move on. I don't know how we got to Zac Efron from Fist of Guthix.
Romeo and Juliet. This is your own fault. You did this.
I'm sorry. All right, so Elite Skills. Development blog from Mod Timbo here, basically highlighting what Elite Skills are and why they're going that way. In a nutshell for you guys, Elite Skills are skills that are going to combine multiple high-end skills, so you'll need to have level 80, for example, in a minimum of two of them. Examples that they have for potential elite skills are necromancy, archaeology, and of course sailing. Necromancy would be prayer, magic, and summoning, whereas archaeology would be mining, thieving, hunter, and construction.
And they're really excited about necromancy, aren't you?
No, I'm actually hoping for invention. But we know that'll be the first one, so.
I am completely on the sailing hype train.
All right.
Yeah, I think it's interesting how somebody, you know, made a little icon, called it sailing, and for April Fools, and, you know, something wasn't real has become...
Was that for April Fools?
No. It was not for April Fools. It was actually the divination icon was leaked in one of the videos. One of the BTS videos had, like, a screen on there with a divination icon.
And it just looked like a ship?
Yeah, or it was... It was either the divination icon or like the path system.
It was well before divination, so I'm going to say the path system.
Oh, it's probably the path system then. They introduced with, how is that island called?
Ashdale.
The new tutorial island.
Ashdale.
That came with like the path system, with like the Pathfinder armor. And there's, was it? I don't even know.
No, Ashdale is actually very important, but we'll talk about that later, maybe.
It is.
But at least they introduced some sort of path system at some point, and the icon for that on the menu toolbar was like, how do you call those things? Like those posts that tell in. Yeah. Those things that tell you in what direction what city is.
Compass.
A compass. Or a signpost.
Signpost. There you go. That's the word I was looking for. And if you look at that in really bad quality, it looks apparently a bit like a sailing ship. So that's where sailing came from.
Yeah. And I mean, okay. Now we're actually talking about it.
are we trying to avoid sailing?
The solution.
So, also with this, it is possible that we could see level 120 skills in the future as well. If you guys still want 120 skills, then we will continue having that discussion with you and among ourselves on whether they're the right thing for the game. Elite skills do not rule out the possibility of raising existing skills to 120. That's nice.
Yeah, so basically, they are completely different things. Like, they're separate discussions.
Yes, and I mean, I personally think the elite skills are a great idea. What about you guys?
I mean, I was very happy when they said invention would not be a skill, but rather like a combination of smithing, crafting, fletching, whatever. And if you then continue thinking about it, it makes sense that there is some way of progressing in each field of invention.
Wait, so, did you just say if you don't think about it, it makes sense?
If you continue thinking about it.
Oh, okay.
So if you like work out the design further, and I think elite skills are very... Yeah.
Elite skills are a good path that we can follow on based on this, you know, idea in your head.
I think it's a very logical conclusion about we need something to progress the field of invention. The only thing I really hope is that it's not just a flat requirement. Like, you have 80 smithing, 80 crafting, 80 fletching. Now you unlock invention and it's just like any other skill. Like, what I hope is that throughout, like, the 80 to 99 range on those requirement skills, there are still requirements for invention. So it's way more like an interaction between the skills. Because otherwise, I think you're using a huge chance to actually add content to smithing and crafting and fletching and such. Otherwise, it's just like quest requirements. You get the level and forget about it. That's what a lot of people do at first in the game.
Yes, I completely agree with you there. And
I think that is a very important point. And the answer that one of the mods gave on a similar concern is actually very concerning, because they say they leave it to the designers of the elite skill. So, yeah, that's something that concerns me a bit.
Yeah, and I mean, definitely post that, Sirion. That's a great idea, and it needs to be brought up. So,
I think several people have already brought it up. I think.
I don't know what I did there. Apparently, we can play songs from the spotlight thing in OS X. But anyways, yeah. Anything else on elite skills? I think they're a good idea. Reid, what do you think?
Should be interesting.
All right.
I will wait and see. I'll take the wait and see approach, as I often
do. Yeah, well, I mean, Mod Timbo is involved in this, so it should be good.
Mm-hmm. Osborne is involved in it as well, so... I mean...
Well, that's promising.
And they're not giving the design to the players, so that's also...
Well, they are going to post design docs. So, it's going to be similar to Elf City, I guess, in that they... give players the possibility to give input, but I really hope they have some senior designers on there, so yeah. I hope it will be alright.
Yeah, and I mean, if it's anything like that, then let's just hope it's not too OP at the end, because we know how Priftiness came out.
Yeah.
Alright, so we also got a behind the scenes video this week talking about the Hero's Welcome quest and the Summer Beach Party, so you guys can give that a watch. We'll save most of the discussion for the quest for next week, but I will say that the requirements are level 60-ish and a variety of skills. Anyone have any quick parting words on the BTS video?
I do not.
Nope.
All right, well... I'm sorry I probably blew everyone's ears out there, but if you, on OS X, if you, middle click over a word, you get a dictionary definition. But if that's also the name of an album on iTunes, you can pull that up and just start playing the song.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's a really cool feature.
Yeah, I agree. All right, so we're going to move on to questions right now.
Stuck with you two.
First one is an audio question from the RR Man.
Hey dudes, it's the RR Man here. How's it going? I hear you've got a questing dude on this week, so questing question. It's always thrown up in the air every once in a while. Am I a cheater because I like to use walkthroughs? To be honest, the Lord... kind of interests me, but most of the time that's not really why I play RuneScape, so I like to use a guide. On that point, just recently I've found some video guides that are really good, so anyone out there that needs to do a quest and really just wants to finish it, you can go to I'm Sick of It on YouTube, all one word, or The Complete RS, and that's some good YouTube guides there for anyone out there. Peace out.
All right. It's also worth noting that we do have a couple of quest playthroughs up on youtube.com/rsbnbstaff. I believe we got Shiloh Village. The Giant Dwarf is coming. Broken Home.
Have you not done that yet?
No, I haven't done that yet. Okay. Dimension of Disaster. Yeah. So we got a few of them up there.
And then every new quest I do a playthrough of, I stream it, and then... It goes up on the YouTubes.
Yeah, and if Earth is feeling willing, you get to see his lovely face on Twitch as he posts and progresses through the quest.
Yeah.
All right, so using a guide, yes, no, maybe so.
I always try to do it without, but for things like Broken Home, where I begin to have an urge to harm myself, I will use a guide, but only very, very, very sparingly.
I think cheater is a big word for saying, am I a cheater when I use guides? No. I mean, I think you are missing out if you do things with guides.
Yes.
Because, I mean, puzzles are designed to be solved and take a while. And by using your guides, you just skim through the quest. And I think you miss some of the experience and some of the cool feeling at the end of the quest. Like, I finished it all on my own. That gives a good feeling.
Happy thoughts at the end of Broken Home were, oh my god, thank god, it's over.
Yeah. I mean, I think using guides can be a tool, as in what Earth says, like, in Broken Home, when you get at a point you just want it to be over with, or let's not even bring up Morning's End. So, I mean, yeah, I don't think it's that big of an issue to use guides, but I think you're missing out on the experience, so definitely give it a chance to do it without guide.
Now, that said, I am not a combat person, so, like, if I know there's a big final boss coming up, I will look at a guide for that.
Or you ask me.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, but big bosses like Nomad and Vanstrom, I used guides. I did the dwarf
Avatar.
One. The dwarf one.
Yeah, that one was easy. I thought Vanstrom was easy as well.
I did that on my own, but that was pretty much the day after release or something. And what you can then do a lot is like go into our clan chat, for example, and just ask people, like, how did you do it? What method to use? And so it's a bit of a mix between using a guide or maybe just asking others for small hints.
Yeah.
And if you want to do that, the clan channel, guest clan channel, is Clan Quest. That's the clan name.
Nice plug.
And also, I'll say that I find that, you know, quests these days are very self-explanatory about where you need to go and what you need to do. And if you have been on the world for a good amount of time, you'll know where you're supposed to go. So I think that handles
like
a large portion.
Like that one Ashdale quest, you were talking about a puzzle, and I was like, what?
Oh, yeah.
There was a puzzle?
Yeah, involving the light.
I didn't even notice the puzzle.
But that was a good quest, actually.
It really was.
Yeah.
Gave that a 5.
Very
rare, because it was exactly what was advertised.
Yeah, but in addition to that, I mean, if you get stuck on a puzzle or something, you can start using a guide. But using a quest guide is kind of the same thing as having a story read to you versus reading the story yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I would not follow a guide to the letter, but if I get stuck, I will look at one.
Yeah. And also remember that guides can have inherent biases in them in terms of, you know, what you'll need and whatnot, so not everything written in a guide should be taken as gospel. Oh, just some guides, you know, overly exaggerate how easy or how hard some aspect of combat might be. So I just wanted to point that out, that if you know your own combat status, that can also help you as well. But all right. Thank you, Mr. RR Man. Good question and a fair one to ask about everyone. But I think at the end of the day, we just want people to play through the quests and enjoy them for the lore and the story that they provide, right?
Yeah.
And, definitely.
And if you're taking that from the quest, you're already accomplishing what the quest is set out to do, and you're a very good person in my books if you do that. Whereas if you just race through the quest and just get it to get the reward, then, well, you're not really using the quest what it was designed for.
Nope.
All right. We got two questions from Thieves this week. What do you think will happen to Virago once she, it's actually she, inevitably delivers the final blow to Tuska? Oh, I'm sorry. Virago's a he. Whoops. I thought we were... I had the wrong... I'm sorry. I had the wrong genders there. Virago is a he. And Tuska... and Tuska is a she. I'm sorry. So...
classic shame.
Let me try this again. What do you think will happen to Virago once he inevitably delivers the final blow to Tuska?
What? Is that gonna happen?
I thought there was something that mentioned Virago in this world event, no?
I haven't been paying attention to it.
The
so.
God representative from the Godless is related to Virago. Like, you have all the God emissaries, and the Godless don't have a God, so they have Virago, which is probably one of the biggest beings involved with the Godless.
Oh, okay.
So if Armadale would have won, then it would have been likely that Armadale came up to save the day and stabbed Tuska, because that's what's going to happen. We are not necessarily harming Tuska right now. We are harming the addicts that currently lie around Tuska to allow the gods to get there.
Yeah, it's a weakening. It's a weakening of the shield, so to speak.
Yeah. So if the Godless are going to win, who's going to do that final blow? And Virago might be just the guy, but...
you think he could ascend to some tier of godhood on this?
Oh, God, but then would they really be godless anymore?
Killing a god does make you a god, strictly speaking. Uh-huh. So, yes, in a way, if Virago actually delivers...
if you do it right.
But just because...
it's interesting.
Just because the godless are godless doesn't necessarily mean that they will abandon Virago as their representative. Because they just don't want interaction. Granted, if Virago takes a bit of power from this, I mean, he won't be a god on the Order of Ceridomen or anything like that, but he could take some power from it. I think that's the way that is going to be the best of looking at it. And, I mean, how Virago will get up and, you know, to do that to Tuska, I don't exactly know. But it'll be interesting nonetheless, I think. I mean,
it could even introduce an interesting conflict of interest within the godless. If one of them does become a god, that becomes interesting. Like, what if a godless person becomes a god?
And when you think about it, they really haven't done anything that grand with the godless yet, so this might be that little jumping off point, right?
Yeah.
Because they were supposed to be involved with Invention, but they scaled that involvement back, as was revealed a couple weeks ago in the stream. So Godless does need to do something. The question is what?
Yeah.
But the question is, I mean, the only way this would be able to happen, I think, I mean, do we know if Virago is capable of getting out from underground?
We do not, I think.
Because if he's not able to get out, how is he going to stab Tuska? Tuska would have to land right on top of that area north of Falador. So, I mean, brings in its own set of problems, but it could be very interesting, to say the least.
Yeah. I'm not quite convinced that Virago will be involved, but I would not be able to say what exactly will happen.
Yeah. And I mean, we're only 3 or 4 days away from that, so we'll know for next week's show. But this is certainly a good theory, I think. I'm going to sit in Sirion's abode, and I don't know what's ultimately going to happen here. But anyways, let's move on to the next one. What do you think Sliske's grand plan is, if he has one? You first.
That is... wow. I think this is a very, very difficult thing. I think nobody really knows what Sliske is being up to. I think that in his own way, he is just... he's mad. He's crazy. And he probably has something he wants, but I mean, I think you can compare him a bit to Littlefinger from Game of Thrones. Like, he's just putting the whole world into chaos, and then somewhere he's gonna get out of there and maybe start a new world order where he is on top. I don't know. I mean, that is what he appears to be doing. He's playing people out against each other. Like, he killed Gotix. Spoilers, sorry.
No, it's okay. We all know that by now.
So he tumbled the world into chaos. Then he did the whole Stone of Jazz thing. Played the gods out against each other. He's involved in the Zaros quest. So he's like everywhere and just like putting his pawns in place and playing factions against each other. And the only reason I can think as reason for that is to cause chaos. And maybe he is happy with chaos, but my guess is that he plans to take something out of that chaos into something that is beneficial for him.
I ultimately think he wants godhood.
I don't think he's doing anything right now because it's still in development.
You know who he always reminded me of, though?
Who?
Q from Star Trek.
Yeah.
All right.
Basically a supernatural being who just...
He's a god. A god.
Just interacts with things.
Omnipotent. And loves messing with people.
Yeah, and that's probably all Sliske is. I mean, until we know better, that's the best way of summing him up.
Do you think he is playing with people for the reason of playing with them, then?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right.
Look at his face.
I mean, I think he enjoys it, but I think there is something that will at some point come up that binds everything together. I think so.
Maybe he just wants to be the leader of the Majorat and have that be the dominant order, and he wants to lead that.
New World Order.
I think it would be less straightforward than that.
Yeah, and I mean, if the entire Six Age sums up to that, that is just a waste of time, in my view. It's got to sum up to something grand. Okay. Earth, did you want to say what Sliske's grand plan is?
No, because it's still in development.
Okay. Well, moving on.
No, he's okay. Just planning to mess with people. Yet again.
No.
So.
Much like you like to mess with me sometimes.
I have never done that ever.
Oh, you
have.
Not
a single time.
Oh, you have. And our last question is from Trekkie. What do you think Zaros has been doing? It has been a while.
Still in development. He's doing the same thing as Sliske, just biding his time, planning, because they're kind of similar, except Sliske's a showman, and Zaros is, like, his manager.
That That's a very good way of putting it. And, I mean, Zaros could have, you know, even a worse ultimate end goal for what he wants, though I don't think he does, than Sliske does. But, I mean, Zaros acts through other people, and he doesn't exactly say what he's planning, and he's not out there. So that's a very good comparison right there. We'll probably learn more in the Saren quest that's coming up this summer, I'd imagine.
Woo! Is that this month or next? I guess it'd have to be next month.
Yeah, it would have to be July or August.
So it's the 27th.
Yep, we just got the V quest next week.
Ah, that's the quest that's coming out.
Yes. Sirion, what's Zaros up to?
This is a really difficult thing. Like, we can consider the time between two quests in our own time. But somebody who plays a quest in the future might, of course.
It's 5 minutes.
Yeah. And I think actually something like that happens in the Elf quest series, where like two quests are like immediately after each other. But with all the extra requirements the second one needs, usually there's a bit of a gap in between. So
there's also the one where an emissary comes and finds you.
That was Regicide.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So maybe the next quest line will pick up immediately after Fate of the Gods. That is unlikely, but possible. So if we put that aside, what has Sarah been doing? I think he's going to be at the beach next week, sitting back and enjoying the weather.
All right. Well, would you like to expand on that, or shall we move on?
I think it's pretty self-explanatory.
All right.
He needs a tan. He's been in the Shadow Realm for a while. It's very pale.
He's purple.
You're purple.
Thanks, I guess.
You're welcome.
All right. Well, that's it for questions this week, everyone. If you want to send us some questions, you can do that by emailing them audio or text to questions@rsbnp.com. Or if you want to send us one by the telephone, you can just pick up that old ring-ring device and phone it into...
That old ring-ring device.
And phone it in to 571-57-BNB or 571...
Or you can send a text message.
Wait, I didn't say the full number. 571-572-2632. And, of course, you can send a text message there as well if you want to send a question in that way.
Woo!
All right, so tech
21st
news.
Century, y'all.
Yes. Speaking of the 21st century, music streaming. Who'd have ever thought we'd be getting music through the internet and any music we want?
Napster, circa, what, 1995?
Anyways, yeah.
Excuse me, I was 5 years old at the time.
Yes. So
you were what, like 60?
Oh, probably. No.
Probably.
So this week there was a bit of a back and forth between Apple and Taylor Swift pertaining to the launch of Apple's upcoming Apple Music service, in which Apple had originally decided that they were not going to pay royalties to the artists during the 3-month trial. Taylor Swift took issue with this, wrote a letter to Apple, tweeted it. Apple saw it. And Apple reversed course.
So this is not just Taylor Swift. There's also like a bunch of indie sound people that had the same issue. But of course,
they don't have the same pull.
Indeed.
Yeah. Also, interesting thing. It was interesting watching this, wouldn't you say?
I guess.
I mean, there was a lot of conspiracying online, saying that, you know, Apple was using this for PR, Taylor Swift was using it for PR. But at the end of the day...
Any publicity is good publicity.
Exactly.
Right?
And at the end of the day, both, you know, appeared to come out on top, advancing their own side of it. Apple, of course, advancing Apple Music's reach to this. Of course, anybody who would be paying attention to this would initially become aware of Apple Music, so that's good. And Taylor Swift, people, you know, I don't know if there's anyone not familiar with her would become aware of her and maybe listen to some of her music. So win-win for both sides.
It's good. Some good stuff, by the way.
And the album known as 1989 will now appear on Apple Music, where it does not appear on Spotify.
Yep. I give Spotify 3 months before they've negotiated it back.
And that's
It has not been on Spotify for me here in the Netherlands for a long while, actually. So
yeah.
Taylor Swift seems to be somebody who takes problems with these streaming services if they are not fair to the
artists.
So that is it is always a bit of a conflict because these streaming services, they are pretty cheap and they have to be pretty cheap, I think. Otherwise people won't get them. So
Yeah,
I mean I pay $5 a month for a Spotify premium subscription because I'm a student. So
that's pretty cheap.
I think
I'm
not sure about Taylor Swift in particular, but we still have a long way to go, or the music industry still has a long way to go, moving away from the old-fashioned profit model.
And you see, that's exactly the thing, and that's why it's good to have Apple in on this, because Apple changed the music industry for the first time with the iPod, so maybe this will be the cusp of changing it again, because, you know, these artists do have issues with Spotify and whatnot. And if those issues can go away with Apple Music, that creates a better ecosystem for the artists at Apple Music. And if the music people want to listen to is available on Apple Music, people will use Apple Music, which is, I mean, like I said at the beginning of this, it's a win-win for everyone involved.
Yeah.
And let's also not forget that Apple, if they want to do something, can do something. It's just a matter of getting other people to agree. In the industry, rather. And
no argument there.
I mean, this is going to be the most widespread music service when it comes out. Anyone who has an iPod, an iPhone, or an iPad is going to have access to this on Tuesday. So,
not true, actually. Spotify is still can reach more people.
No, but I mean, you don't need to install an app. It's built right in.
And?
It's built right in.
Yay!
You don't need to find an application. So.
More built-in software I don't want.
But it's just going to replace the standard music app on your phone.
Not mine.
Okay, nobody asked you.
You did.
No, I didn't.
I am the co-host of this show, so anything you say, I have a right to question.
That's true, but I mean,
I know
you have a Windows phone.
I am exercising that right. Yes,
and I give you 1 year from this point till you're firmly back using an iPhone.
Why would I do that to myself?
Because it's a good software platform.
Yeah, but it's not great.
It is. It really is. I could go into a lot of reasons why it's superior to all the others, but that's not...
I know.
But that's not why we're here right now, so...
No.
Ultimately, I think with this, Apple Music is going to be a success, and, I mean, Taylor Swift was actually a force for good in this, unlike some other artists who just like flaunting causes that really aren't that worthwhile. So... I'm happy about this. Good for all sides.
Well.
And this is coming from someone who doesn't actually listen to music currently, so who knows what this will do for me.
Absolutely nothing.
Well, I mean, it's free, right? So who knows? I might discover something that never existed.
You have a Spotify account.
Yeah, but I don't use it.
You do when I send you something.
The reason I don't use it is because it sounds like garbage.
What?
Yeah, the non-premium account, the free account, sounds bad.
Oh my god.
I can hear the, you know, the the compression in that, and it.
Well, stop using your Beats by Dre, then.
No, I don't have those. Anyways, moving on. This next story deals with something related to the gaming industry and a new thing that Steam can do. This week, a new game was released called Batman Arkham Knight, and it was pulled from PC retailers and Steam because, well, it didn't really run at a suitable frame rate. Not even 30 frames per second.
No, it was very, very messed up.
Yeah.
It was undeniably the worst PC port of this year so far.
Yeah, and I mean,
It is compared to Assassin's Creed Unity, and
that was pretty bad as well.
So, yeah.
And when it comes down to this, game developers need to know that if something doesn't run well on someone's PC, they're going to notice it. It's not, you know, something that can just be swept away. Performance is very noticeable on the PC. So, if you release something on the PC, it had better be good.
Yeah, and people were able to hack it to not limit it to 30 frames per second. And even on the top-end graphics cards, they're only able to get, like, 40 FPS. So, yeah.
That's embarrassing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The problem with these AAA games is that, I mean, we have the whole pre-ordering culture right now. So a lot of people just buy the game, it comes out, and then it runs like crap. And for some reason, AAA companies get away with it because next time, all the people are still in line buying all these games as pre-order. But this is the first AAA game that came out since Steam introduced the refund system. And when AAA companies now pull a stunt like this, people are going to ask for their money back.
Yeah, which you can't really do with disc games at all. Right?
No. So Steam never had that refund policy. So if you had Assassin's Creed a year ago and it ran like crap, then, well, what can you do? I mean, there was some sort of system to get your money back, but it didn't always work. It was not documented, etc. Like, officially in the terms of service of Steam, it said you don't get your money back. So,
yeah.
This is, I think, a great example how the Steam refund system might be able to completely overthrow the games industry.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, from the beginning, Steam had very novel ideas. And I think that there was just a couple of things maybe relating to the payment processing side and the game publisher side that prevented them from doing refunds sooner. But now that they have it, yes, exactly like you said, can completely change the gaming industry. And
I am not...
I think this launch is a good idea, or a good example of that.
Yeah, I'm not sure if Steam would have actually implemented refunds if it wasn't that the European Union has a law now that every digital good bought via the internet, or any good bought via the internet, must be able to be returned within 2 weeks. That includes digital goods like games. So, in a way, Steam was forced to implement this. Otherwise, Steam would have been blocked in all of Europe, and that would have been very bad for Steam.
Yeah, I don't know if that would have went over very well.
No, of course not. But, I mean, in a way, Steam was forced to implement it. It's a good thing, of course. But whether it was Steam's idea or the idea or the fact that it came from the law here in Europe, I don't know. I think this is a great example of AAA games finally being put in place because they have some sort of improved position in the market because people know the names, people know the brands, people buy those games. They're like completely stupid for pre-ordering those games, but they do it anyway. And the AAA companies just cash in on those and then just release a crappy game. And I think that is really bad for the whole games ecosystem.
Yeah, and I mean, we got to take what progress we can, and ultimately this is a step in the right direction. Now the next step will just, you know, be to stop the games companies somehow from changing the box and the name and making a few fixes and marketing it as something new. But anyways,
I'm very curious to see what will happen to future AAA releases on Steam. This is the first AAA game. It might be an exception, but maybe we'll see this kind of things happening more often.
Yeah, we can definitely hope.
I hope so.
So,
well, not that they're terrible game releases, but that, yeah.
All right.
You know what I mean.
Yes. We're going to move on now to our last piece of tech news, and that involves the Apple Store, or the App Store, removing games from there that have the Confederate flag in screenshots or in the app icon. When this happened midweek, it was roughly a knee-jerk reaction that saw these games
For
disappear.
Once, I agree with that.
Yeah, saw the games disappear, and app developers had to work very quickly to, talk to Apple on the phone or through the internet to figure out what they can do to get their games back on there quickly, because these are some people's livelihoods. But yeah, definitely a knee-jerk reaction in this case, I think.
All right, so you can't talk about this without discussing, like, the backstory.
Yeah, and you can provide that
behind
for us.
All of it. I'm from the South, so, you know, quite literally close to home. I do not fly the rebel flag. I do not own anything with it on it, but I'm also very liberal, but I am also very against removing it from anything. Like, removing it from the state flag, some of the state flags? No, that's dumb. Those were established for a reason. Like, there's no reason to change it. And, like, I don't even remember, I'm not even sure what the actual issue was that sparked all of this, but it was something a hell of a lot more important than a stupid flag, right?
Yeah, it was the church shooting.
Oh, yeah, it was the church shooting. But I haven't heard that much about that.
Exactly.
I've heard more about this flag thing than the shooting.
Welcome to identity politics of the 21st century.
The fact that I couldn't remember that is just a very big problem.
Yep.
Because it's not that big of a deal.
Yes.
At all. It is a flag. The symbol is what you make of it. If you want to make it into a symbol of racism, all right, there you go. It's a symbol of racism. It's also, oddly enough, like, and this is really weird, but the people down here who fly those are also some of the most patriotic people I know.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Even though it's the flag of a country that broke away from the United States, somehow it's used as, like, national pride.
I mean, think about the
people. I don't get that. I don't quite get that, but whatever, right?
Yeah. And you need to think of the families out there who, you know, have a deep lineage going back to the Civil War and whatnot, who might have,
like,
lost people
in
that war. The Confederate flag is tied to
up
that.
Up north, people, which seems to be where most people have these issues, all those Yankees. Like, people who come over in the 1890s after the Civil War, like Italians, they still identify as Italian. They don't identify as American, generally. Like, they just have different communities up there still. But in the South, like, I identify as a Tennessean or a Southerner, right?
Sure.
So you just have a completely different identity. I think I'm of German heritage because of my last name, but I don't really know. It doesn't really matter because I don't identify as German or of German descent. I just identify as Southern. Um, And the whole thing is, the big difference about Southern people from those up north is that it's just hospitality. Like, I've become a big hockey fan lately, and I've seen a lot of people say that Nashville is the nicest place, one of the nicest places to go, because everyone's nice. Everyone's welcoming. They don't try to... They're very helpful. And that's the whole Southern hospitality thing. If someone in the neighborhood dies, this is more in small towns, but if someone, in the neighborhood dies, you may not know them, but you'll take something to their family. Like, that's the thing we do down here.
Yeah, and that's very nice.
Do you guys do that?
No, we very rarely talk to our neighbors.
Well, in our country, when you live in a small town, people generally all know each other anyway. But yeah, it works pretty similar to what you describe here, except for in big cities and such.
Yeah. And just, I don't know how many generations ago my family immigrated to the United States, but I still don't, I don't identify as that. And I'm also not, blaming this on the foreigners. I'm just explaining the difference in the cultures.
Oh, yeah.
Because, if you still want to identify as the country your family came from, that's fine. I have no problem with that, but... it's just different. So that's a very roundabout way of explaining this issue, but people who want it removed do not really understand.
Yeah.
Sirion, you I remember talking to you a while back about people were really angry about something with Christmas, right? Do you know what I'm talking about?
No,
the chimney and blackface and all of that. Yeah,
Black Pete in the Netherlands. Yeah, that's a huge issue here. We have this tradition. There's a holiday every year where there's some sort of saint, who comes, around and gives. Gifts to all the children, blah. There's a whole tradition around it. Basically, has a few servants, and those are always painted black. And the reason they are black is because they climb through the chimney, just like your Santa Claus, who actually comes from this tradition, but historical details. And they are painted black because of all the ashes in the chimney. That is literally the reason they are black. Except for all the black people in the Netherlands have started complaining about it because they're black people and they're servants, so it would be racist. So somebody from the UN came over and she was like, yeah, stop with this tradition because it's racist. So that, you take away the whole historical context and you look at this one part of the issue and you take the bad thing out of it without looking at what is actually going on. In your case, it is the shooting where the flag was used as a symbol. And that person used it as a symbol, but it doesn't make the whole concept behind that flag a bad thing all of a sudden.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But I will say, there are some racist people still, obviously. And they probably do use that as a symbol for racism. So I'm not saying that either.
Oh no, but
it's non-existent.
It is so easy to take only that group of people that do bad things with it and take that as an example instead of looking at the whole context.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So,
and I just want to take this up one level to, the level of society and where society is at with this. This whole thing was also a discussion relating to other things here that have happened recently as well. And the question is, what were we initially talking about? And this has become the number one issue that people like to latch onto, and that is something called identity politics, in that everything that has a decision to be made, whether it be about the flag or the Christmas traditions in the Netherlands, you cannot make decisions without making people feel like their feelings were hurt. And when their feelings were hurt, or are hurt rather, you get them making the loudest noise possible, and then you get decisions like these being made. And making decisions in the modern world has become so much about not hurting feelings rather than actually fixing problems.
Yeah, now I do want to reiterate that the biggest problem with this entire thing is that it's what's being focused on and not the shooting.
Exactly.
Because this is... Who cares? It's a flag. No one cares.
I mean, what surprises me most is that this is, like, the flag in these games is used in a historical context.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Look at basically every single Second World War game. We all know the cross flag of Germany. You see that thing everywhere. But Germany did horrible things during those wars.
And those haven't been removed.
No. So, I mean, it is a bad thing. If you would now walk around with that flag, people would get pretty pissed at you, especially in this country.
Yes.
But if it is used in, like, a movie or a game, because that is what's going on here. Like, Apple is removing these games, and in a way, they are making the flags in those games a bad thing.
Yep.
While they're just an historical representation of one of the factions during the Civil War. And I'm pretty sure that Apple would not have any problems if any video they would redistribute would contain them. They even said so. They don't, they even said in their official statement something like, if people want to talk or about the Confederate flag or the Civil War, they can write a book, they can write a podcast, they can make a song, but they can't make games. And this shows some sort of underlying issue that apparently when a Confederate flag is used in a game, all of a sudden it's a problem.
Yeah.
And I think apart from the underlying politics, which is already a huge minefield probably, the whole reason to remove these games is still completely ungrounded.
Oh yeah, it's, I mean, like I said, like I said when you started out, you're destroying livelihoods by doing this, and I mean, every day the game is not up, they're not making money off it. And
indeed,
let's just remember, Apple's led by Tim Cook in California, the most liberal part of the United States, where I hate to say it, identity politics comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And just another thing about the Confederate flag and the symbol and people getting all upset over it. It's only bad if you make it bad, right?
Yep. Exactly.
Like, just going back to the German flag, there is a mod in Fallout New Vegas that allows you to save Christmas from Nazis. That's
mm-hmm.
hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it would probably offend someone, but, like, it's...
It is true that you should not pull these tricks in Germany in general.
Well, yes. Yes, that is the one exception, I would say. But that's different entirely.
Yeah. Ugh.
But that's enough of that.
I agree. All right, moving on to other things. We do have a Skill of the Month update for you guys. our fletching skill of the month is progressing nicely. Flash
Fishing.
Is in the lead with 12.2 million experience gained, followed by Tim with 11.6 million experience gained, and third place is Magic King with 7.1 million experience. 4 days left in the month. You think Tim will stage a comeback, or is his 5-month winning streak broken?
I don't know. He's pretty scrappy.
Yeah, he's 800k XP behind right now, and who knows what's going to happen. But I'm always for some shake-up in the competition.
It's good to see some competition.
I agree. And for anyone wondering, our July skill for Skill of the Month is Magic. So you can sign up at rsbnb.com/skotm.
And if everything goes to plan, I should be getting 99 magic this month.
Yay! So. Good job. Excellent.
But I keepsaked my untrimmed farming kit.
Okay,
so
you don't
need to worry about that.
You don't need to rub that in every week.
He's jealous of my beautiful untrimmed farming cape.
Yeah, keepsakes didn't exist back then. All right. Achievements of the week. We got a good number of them this week. I'll start. One asterisk got 120 Dungeoneering on June 25th. That's a big one. Congratulations. I know you PM'd me about that. And having it read on the show, well, here you are. Congratulations.
Nice.
Well done.
Next.
Next is... What is that? Subsistence?
Yes.
Yes. Subsistence got 99 runecrafting on June 24th, 2015.
Good job. Next up, I'll take the next two.
Congratulations.
Fire Mana got 99 crafting and 99 summoning on June 22nd. That's Jason. Used to be an Informer writer. Good job. And Sirion, you can take the last two.
Magic King got 99 fire making and 99 fletching. Congratulations.
Woo! Good job. All right, so pick of the week.
So are we going with mine?
Yes.
Sirion, you don't have one?
Nope, go ahead.
All right, so my pick of the week is... this is in beta right now, but it is Xbox to PC streaming. I have tested that out over the last 24 hours, and I have to say it works pretty well. I have a Surface Pro 3, and I'm able to stream to it, and it works just fine, even just over Wi-Fi wireless in. The quality, I mean, as I said, it's still in beta, and the quality is all right, but, again, over Wi-Fi. Yeah, it's really awesome. I think, did I do Steam in-home streaming as a pick before?
I think you might have.
Yeah, I mean, it's, even just right now, just as good as Steam in-home streaming. The only issue I have is it's not the same resolution as my Surface. My Surface is 2160 by 1440 natively instead of 1920 by 1080. So that's the only issue I have. But, like, my Surface barely gets warm. The fan just barely starts running.
So how does Microsoft handle the difference in resolution?
It just puts black bars at the bottom.
Oh, okay.
Top, which is fine.
I have to say, because
I mean, if you scale it up, it looks bad.
Yeah.
So,
I have to say, this is probably my favorite, if not second most favorite, feature coming with the release of Windows 10.
Yeah. Now, one caveat to this: it is mirrored, so what's showing on the TV is also what we'll be showing on your console. I'm not sure if they'll be able to change this later. I kind of doubt it. But, so, like, someone can't be watching TV while you're playing a game. But,
I remember seeing a blacked out screen. I know it would take over, but I don't remember it mirroring on the TV as well.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a way to just black out the screen too.
Yeah, I remember that in one of the demos that they did.
I don't know.
But beta software, right? So.
Yeah. So we'll find out.
Traditional caveat.
Just over a month.
Software. Yes. All right. So that's Xbox and Windows 10 streaming. Very nice.
It's really cool.
So, Sirion, we have a topic now called What Have You Been Doing? You can share what you've been doing. It can be RS, real life, anything you want. So let's start with you. What have you been up to on RS?
I've been trying to win in the, what is it, Skill of the Week competition in fishing. But it's not really working out because somebody is even more fishing no life than me. And otherwise,
that's impressive.
My vacation is coming up, so I'm just wrapping up a few things in real life, including some things from my thesis, and that's pretty much it.
All right. Yeah, and it's worth noting at this point that this is the first skilling competition we're running for the wider RuneScape community, and we will be running more of these in the future. Skill of the Week or weekend competitions. So just be watching the forums and the show for when we run those and anybody can enter them. Definitely good uptake with this one involving Clan Quest. We'll probably try and involve some other fan sites in the future as well. So stay tuned with that.
Yeah.
All right. Earth, what have you been up to?
Work. Took the day off yesterday, and that's when I started messing with Steam and Xbox to PC streaming. But I did a little bit of fishing, not too much. That's pretty much it.
All right.
Haven't been doing that much.
I'm still beating Earth then. That's a good thing.
Yeah, I've gained probably like 30k XP. So
he's easy to beat in these skilling competitions. Just look at the
piss off.
Well, the December 2010 farming skill month.
I won that.
No, you didn't. That was mine. All mine.
All
but
right.
Anyways, well, as for me this week, I basically, as you see, the Clan Quest skilling competition, I wrote the back end for that and the graphs. So that was this week. But on RS, I got 75 million farming XP.
Oh, man.
Yeah. In addition to that, well, I got all the stuff for my ports. I just don't have 92 smithing yet, so I can't smith my katanas, though. That'll come eventually. You know, need to get back into the, I guess I would call it high-end money-making on RS. Haven't really been doing enough money-making to fund the full magic farming program. Had to drop down to yews and papayas for the time being. So that's what I will be doing on there. But that's been this episode of RSBNB Update. You guys have anything else that you guys would like to share?
Not really.
Not in particular.
All right. Well, thank you for listening, everyone, and sharing your time with us. And we will see you all next week for the Quest and the RuneScape Summer Beach Party.
Oh, man. Bye, everyone.
Goodbye.